Everybody, welcome to the PC Perspective Podcast. This is episode 366, being recorded on September 9th, 2015. I'm Ryan Schrapp.
I'm Jeremy Hellstrom.
I'm Josh Walbreth.
And I'm Alan Malventano.
Alan.
Not Alvin.
Just clarifying that for anybody that may be paying attention.
Alvin Malventano.
Why do we have chipmunks?
It does make it roll off the tongue already.
Alvin,
there,
yeah, Alvin Malventano. Alvin. Just kind of just... I can see how that would just come out.
Can we bring this to a vote?
I've had telemarketers.
All right, get your name changed before the next
Let's
podcast.
All vote. There's five of us. There can't be a tie. Who thinks it should be Alvin?
Well, it's better than telemarketers that have called me.
Only two. Three.
Right, is this Mr. Tano? Mr. Malvin Tano?
No, Melvin Tano doesn't.
Tano, Mr. Malvin Tano.
Yeah.
Please pick up a courtesy white phone.
Never pick up the courtesy phone. It's always a trick.
It's always
dirty.
They're
going to steal your bag when you're not looking. That's what that's for. Welcome to the show, everybody. This is the PC Perspective Podcast. We talk about computer hardware most of the time, some of the time. Sometimes we
usually
don't. Yeah. Yeah. We do record the show live. We always record the show live. We broadcast it live on Wednesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific at pcper.com/live. If you go there at that time or thereabouts, you'll find us live streaming. You can hang out in the chat room and talk with everybody else watching the stream. Interact with us. Alan pays attention and answers questions. I look at it and ignore it. There's all kinds of things that occur in the live stream. And we have interesting pre-shows and interesting post-shows sometimes. It all just depends on the day of the week. We also have other live streams. Like last week, we did a stream sponsored by Logitech where they gave away two G29.
There you go.
There's a lot of monikers. Two G29 racing wheels. They're worth $400 a piece.
Yeah.
And me and Alan and Josh and Scott and Ken all like played racing games.
And your
games.
English teacher from high school, who's so proud of you now.
Thank you.
We all played racing games badly.
We played Project Cars and Dirt Rally. I played them poorly. And I was really disappointed that neither game let me turn around and drive backwards.
Yeah. I told you could have turned around and drove backwards just as long as you were actually still going down the track the right way.
What's the point of that?
Exactly. Thank you. Like, that's the whole point of a racing game is, well, I'm in last place. Time to screw up everybody else. I'm going to go reverse and aim head on. Yeah. That is what racing games are for. Right? Like, I mean, that's what I expected. But anyway.
It's too many trolls, and you're feeding them.
Mm-hmm. Well,
team killers.
Hey.
Not sporting.
Hey, they have a place in online gaming.
Obviously.
And they need to be, you know, nurtured a little bit, right? Anyway, if you want to take part in those live events or this live event and you kind of lose track of time, we have a schedule on the right-hand side of the website, obviously, that lists our upcoming events. Or you can go to pcper.com/subscribe, and you'll get this page here. You can sign up for a little mailing list. Let me zoom out of there one more time. You sign up for this little mailing list here that all it asks for is your name and your email address. We just send you notifications an hour or a day before our live stream, depending on what we're doing. And you can take part in it. And it's really awesome and it's fun. And we don't send you spam very often. It's only spam for live streams that we do.
Yep.
So let's get into the heat of things here, as there's still a lot going on here at the PC Perspective offices late at night. We're going to start with Josh.
Me?
Which is a little depressing for me. Josh, you posted a review of an AMD motherboard.
I did.
An AMD motherboard.
It's a new AM3 Plus
new
motherboard, which are becoming rather scarce. Scarce as hen's teeth.
Yeah.
But MSI, they did it. Last spring, we started hearing about their 990 FXA gaming board. They had some hints going out and kind of a small viral campaign, about as viral as you could possibly get for an AM3 Plus product.
Yeah.
But this is, of course, their branded gaming product. It is aimed at the enthusiasts who want a little bit of pop to their product. And they've included a lot of things with it. I mean, it's got the Killer NIC, which is a positive or negative, depending on who you ask. But at least with this implementation, you can choose just to install the driver for the Athros Gigi chip, which is pretty solid networking chip.
Yep.
And if you want the full Killer Suite, you can install that on top as well. It's a software program that handles, you know, quality of service and some other tweaks here and there. It probably is not going to really help your lag. It's not going to kill your lag. that's obviously more dependent on your internet connection, but you can do some other interesting monitoring things with it. And again, you know, explore that as you need and see fit. Sure. And uninstall if you don't need it. It's also got the Sound Blaster Cinema 2 audio function. Now, if you look there at the bottom left-hand corner of the picture, you can see that there is an absolute ton of capacitors surrounding the audio codec. It's an ALC 1192 or 1152. I can't remember exactly. Too many product numbers. But it's a Realtek codec under there. And the audio portion is really nicely well done. And this is probably one of the better integrated solutions that I've ever listened to. And unlike the previous 970 Gaming, which has a very similar implementation, this one seems to just get everything right. It's got dual amplifiers, so when it senses that you're got a headphone that is above 35 ohms, mm-hmm. it activates the amplifier in there. Hmm. And so it's not going to blow your speakers or anything when you plug it in, but when you plug in headphones that may have higher resistance than speakers, then you're going to get a nice little amplification and hopefully a better experience. The overall layout is really good. I like where they're going with the slots, at least. There's a ton of space around the CPU. Everything plugs in really nicely. They've got a ton of USB ports. And one of the big things of this is it's one of the first AMD boards. I think that MSI had one of the actual first with the 970 Crate. But this one features USB 3.1. It's the AsMedia controller, and sometime you should look at the benchmarks and see that it really does offer about double the performance of, and if right there is the USB 3.1, what would you call that?
I don't know.
Just storage device.
Yeah, it's like a little test enclosure we have for USB 3.1 performance.
Yeah, yeah, it's got two 840 Evo SSDs sitting in there. And they should give you, you know, in real-world type speeds, 800 to 900 megabytes per second reads. But I didn't achieve that with this particular implementation. Now, sure. One of the problems, of course, with the 990FX, it's an old chipset. It was a rebrand of the 890FX back in 2009, 2010. They rebranded it 990FX with the release of AM3 and AM3 Plus. And it hasn't really grown with time. Now, some years back, AMD canceled the 1090FX, which we all thought would include PCIe 3.0 functionality and a slightly updated Southbridge. They canceled that. And instead, we've just been left with this. So the 990FX is still a PCIe 2.0 based device, and so I believe that the USB 3.1 controller is attached to the Northridge by two PCIe 2.0 lanes. So
yeah, kind of limits it then.
It is limited as compared to you know, some of the more modern PCIe 3.0 from Intel and the FM2 Plus socket from AMD. Now, if there was one bad part about this, it's going to be the VRMs. It's a 6+2 setup. Now, most higher-end AMD boards had an 8+2 setup, and a lot of those were able to handle the 220-watt FX parts.
Oh, right.
Such as, the FX9590. I was told when I got this board, do not put that chip in there. Just don't do it. We don't want you to test that that way. Because right around that time was when that very famous video of the MSI 970 Crate, where they did put one of those CPUs in, and they turned it on, and the magic smoke started to billow from the VRMs.
It's always good.
Sure. Yeah. Ran like a champ after that. I mean, it got all the resistance out of those VRMs, and it just was then a superconductor. Do it as much power as possible. But no, it. So I was told not to test it that way, and I didn't. So I did the 8370, and it ran perfectly fine. It was a good performing board. One another interesting thing, and I don't know how they did this, but it was able to natively run 2133 memory. Now, if you think back, the original FX series wouldn't go past 1866 in terms of speed. and I checked the bus speeds and everything I could think of, and it looked like it was natively supporting that multiplier on the memory. So I was able to run this board at 2133 speeds, and we did see a little bit of a boost in some benchmarks, especially just the stream benchmarks, obviously. I believe Cinebench had a small boost when you started to actually use all 8 threads, and that would make sense because you got more threads, more memory potential bandwidth that you need to feed everything, and so it got a small performance boost in that. Going back to the VRMs, apparently they have released a new BIOS, and on their CPU page says that as long as you've got the correct thermal solution, you can run these higher-end 220-watt chips. So just a warning, your mileage may vary, because if you think back of last year when I reviewed their 970 gaming, it had a very similar power setup of a 6+2, and I was able to run an FX9590 on that for months without issue. But again, I had good cooling on that, and I didn't try overclocking it very much because, well, it just doesn't go much faster.
Yeah.
Maury would be disappointed at the battery placement because you'd have to remove your video card to take that out. Damn. But otherwise, probably the best thing about it, it's a $129 card. So you get SLI support, you get Crossfire support, 2x16 PCIe native support there. So you can plug in 2 video cards and get the same amount of bandwidth as you would see with an Intel Z170, which, you know, splits, of course, it does split into 2x8, correct? At PCI 3.0 speeds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're not losing out on any bandwidth as compared to, you know, what would be a, you know, higher end Intel. Certainly with their X99 platform, that's not the case. But with the Z170, Z97,
yeah,
it's all going to be right there.
I don't know how many people are still out there buying AMD motherboards, brand new ones, but at least they're modestly priced, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, $129 is just, that's dirt cheap for a good, solid motherboard. And again, I didn't have any problems with it whatsoever. Installation was great. It's got all the features you would expect. Audio was very good. I think, you know, kind of a perfect match with this would be an FX6350. That's a very inexpensive 6-core processor. You can overclock it to a goodly amount and be really happy as an inexpensive gaming machine. And this is going to be a solid platform for you for a couple of years to come. You're not going to see any CPU upgrades in any time ever. But you're not going to be paying a whole lot for what is essentially pretty good performance.
True. Let's move on. Maury posted a review of the Corsair DDR4 memory kit, the Corsair Vengeance LPX, low profile, I'm going to guess extreme. I don't know what else X stands for in this market today. This is DDR4 3200 memory. Nice looking. I mean, it's nice. It's fine looking. It's not nice looking. It's fine looking memory. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever. It looks like memory. But did you know that they still made these guys? Did you know that fans dedicated for memory modules were still...
I didn't know it was still a thing.
I'm disappointed it doesn't have water cooling grommets. I really am.
But only on the air cooler part.
Yeah.
Yes,
right? Absolutely. To blow chilly air down to
exactly
the dims. That would be...
It'll be just as effective.
That would be
right?
The best way to go.
It's a mister.
Right.
Yeah, it just sprays.
It just sprays water on the board. It's fine.
Yeah.
It is available in multiple colors, so there's that. Color match your board, some benefit to that. So Maury went through some of this. There's not a whole lot to get into here. Ran it at specifications, ran it overclocked. That looks a little pink, Maury. That looks red. That looks pink. As Maury does, he takes everything apart all of the way. So that's what an X99 motherboard looks like with 2 of those memory coolers attached. One over each set of 2 dims.
Good luck fitting a cooler.
Your CPU. Surely
does
he must,
get one of those,
right?
He's got to get on there.
No, he doesn't.
I think he's not showing it with a cooler.
Yeah, that's true. You got to use water cooling if you're doing that, I guess.
He doesn't have anything small enough.
Yeah, see there, water cooling.
That would be a good thing to have if you were water cooling and you were running overclocked.
That's not the right board.
Like if you're
that's
water cooling,
a Z170A board.
If you're water cooling and you're running overclocked, RAM at higher voltages, then yes, the RAM will start to cook if it doesn't have like a fan blowing across it. So
yeah. So here's like a quick memory bandwidth test. Pretty impressive stuff.
That's pretty high, actually.
Right? Like you're talking 3,200 megahertz going up to 37 gigs per second. It's kind of interesting to just see the scaling. If you're using DDR4 at 2133 megahertz versus at 3200 megahertz or 3400 megahertz, you do get a pretty sizable jump. What that means in terms of actual performance, you know, less useful. But here is a test. Here is one test that shows some difference, right? The 7-zip performance benchmark here. You get something out of it. I don't know. Would I spend a whole lot of money on 3400 megahertz memory to do that? I probably would not. Overclocking, he goes into all that. This memory kit is $175 on Newegg, $225 on Corsair, and $269 on Amazon. Why? Who the hell knows why it scales that way? Keep checking all three of those locations and find the lowest price point, obviously. But Maury did like the review. And there's no CMOS battery replacement for us to worry about. So, it's good to know. Moving on, we're going to talk to Josh again.
Again.
I don't know why we would do this to ourselves, but you posted a review of the Grado SR225E headphones. And I'm going to ask you to talk to me about this product and this review in a non-boring, non-pretentious manner for not more than a handful of minutes, I guess. So convince me why I want these headphones as opposed to my earbuds. What are these called? Earbuds. The earbuds that I have in my ear.
Earbuds.
Earbuds.
Hey, look, I'm pretty clear.
Yeah, you are.
Wasn't that a movie? Earbud?
No, it was Airbud, and it was about a golden retriever.
Yeah, that's totally different. You know, it's hard to not sound pretentious when you're talking about lovely things like soundstage, timbre, warm, colored.
Timbre.
But no, Grado, they sent me out the SR225Es. Which are a really nice set of headphones. So anyway, boy, I just keep getting clearer and clearer.
It's like magic, you know?
It's like Scientology.
Yep. Wait, what?
But anyway.
Your thetans are leaving you.
They are, one by one. So the first time I ever heard of Grado, a friend of mine who was the audio head at Ritual Entertainment, he came over for a little LAN party, and he brought out these crappy looking 1940s headphones that looked like they probably sounded about like 1940s headphones and plugged them in. And I said, "What are you, crazy, man? I've got some gaming headphones here. Why don't you try those out?" And he just looked at me and started laughing. He laughed and laughed and had a good joke at me because I didn't realize how good these headphones were. Grado has a reputation. They started only making headphones in 1989. Mm-hmm. The Prestige series, which is what this headphone is part of, came out in the mid-90s. And the SR225Es are now the third generation of these products. They've got the SR60, SR80, SR125, 225, and 325. And so this is the $200 version of the Prestige series. And it comes not with anything fancy, except if you consider the sound. You either love Grados or you hate them. And not so much in terms of sound, but in terms of look and comfort, because they're fairly basic. It's a metal strap that goes from ear to ear. It's covered with a vinyl covering that in the summertime gets a little hot. The posts are just kind of mounted in here to give you some vertical movement. The ear cups are stiff. And if you don't get used to them in terms of just the feeling on your ear, they can get uncomfortable very fast. So you actually have to kind of break them in and break yourself in.
You're not selling me, Josh.
What's that?
You're not selling me.
I'm not selling them. But you know what? Once you actually start listening to them, it's a totally different experience because the sound is so much better than most other audio that you will listen to in between the $50 and $250 to $300 range. Now, these are expensive at $200, but if you treasure audio, they're fantastic. In terms of movies, again, I don't want to sound pretentious, but it's got a really expensive soundstage. you can actually hear positional cues really well, even without any kind of post-processing, just because it just is very accurate.
So they're a good match for your LaserDiscs.
Exactly.
So let me ask you this. Why, I believe that they're excellent headphones, sound quality is superb. Why do you think they don't upgrade the other stuff somewhat, at least, to kind of be more competitive in that landscape?
Probably because they don't need to.
But don't you want the band to not stick to your head?
Yeah, that only happens in the summer when temperatures go above 85.
Yeah, but you live in Wyoming. Some people live places where it's 80 like all the time.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? Some people will have more hair than I do.
This is true.
So it's not going to be as
all you do is slap Maury's RAM cooler under there. You're fine.
Exactly. Mm, yeah. Yeah, just walk around with that setup.
Great Omada.
You know, it's not everybody is going to like these. And not everybody's going to like the way they feel. But if they truly care about audio, and audio under multiple scenarios, and I tested movies, TV, gaming, and music.
Yeah.
And it did really, really well under every scenario. And, you know, things like Dirt Rally, they worked really hard on their audio to make it really accurate inside the cockpit of the car that you're racing in. And you can tell that when the gravel's hitting the bottom of the car, it's coming from the bottom of the car. It's just clear. The positioning is great. You've got your co-driver to your right-hand side, unless, of course, you're driving the Mini, and then it's the left-hand side. But
it's good they don't screw that up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and where the where it really excels at is music, and that is their primary aim.
Right.
One of the problems with higher-end headphones is if you've got crap source material, you're going to hear every single crappy thing about it.
So like Sirius XM radio.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, 128 kilobit MP3.
Oh, dude, that's
but with
high.
These, not only do you get really, really clear results from high-end source material, it's able to smooth out the lower-end stuff, too, so it's not really uncomfortable to listen to. So a lot of your older MP3s that you got in the late 90s, all 128, you know, kilobit stuff that you haven't replaced yet through one way or the other, you can still listen to. And it's not going to make you want to tear the headphones off and throw them across the room because, you know, it's 128 kilobit stuff. So,
yeah.
Again, when you're talking about soundstage, just the warmth, I mean, they've really focused on the mid-range, but at the same time, it's got excellent bass response. And not only that, it's not just a thumping bass like you get with, like, Beats Audio or others that have really, you know, pushed that frequency. You can really hear the differences in you know, different drums, different beats, and just the quality of it is a lot better than you would expect. And so it's a 1940s looking design, but the sound is anything but. And if you really want a good sounding pair of headphones, that's not going to break the bank, because they make stuff from $50 up to $1,700.
That's more.
And yeah, that's a lot of money. Yeah. This is, you know, $200 is a really good sweet spot. Try to find somebody who has a pair, or if you know of some place that has a demo, give them a shot. I mean, if it doesn't feel too uncomfortable to you, and it doesn't to me, I don't mind them. I mean, my ears are broken in, and so are the pads on this. The sound is worth it. And again, you're not paying an arm and a leg for it. It's, I mean, the Logitech, their new wireless one is $199. It's the same price.
$200, same price.
Yeah, as these. So give it a shot. You may or may not like it, but I really enjoyed them. And they're really fantastic sounding for the price.
But if you're really happy with Beats Audio, you probably won't like them at all.
Probably not.
Awful.
Wait a minute. Wait. We don't like Beats? Is that the rule? We're not. I have Beats headphones and Monster cables. Therefore, ultimate
sound so much better, says people riding cycles.
And I use those diamond-plated networking cables to get the audio from the network-attached storage to the PC.
I get it.
Hey, if there was one thing, you know, to go back to that review.
I'm looking at
it. Go to the first page and look at the factory. that they produce all of the headphones.
The house?
It's pretty good, actually.
It's that middle townhouse with the graffiti at the front. That's where they produce it all, in Brooklyn, New York.
So right, it's hipster. I got it.
It is.
Hell yeah.
It used to be a fruit store that the family had opened in like 1909.
Saw how that went for them.
They were going to call it Apple, but someone got upset.
Yeah.
The Beatles?
Interesting.
But no, I rented a car there to drive down to Bellevue. It had Beats Audio in it as a feature. And I was getting tired of the blues and the old classic 70s stuff and tried to listen to some heavier stuff and couldn't hear anything except for thud, 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 thud.
You can turn down the bass.
Yeah. I fiddled with it a bit. I was driving, so I didn't want to screw with it too much. But no, it was not pleasant.
Good idea. Safety first.
Yeah. Some metal doesn't agree well with like stereo systems that are like a Beats style.
No, not so much.
Well, that's their problem.
Yeah.
Alan, just before this live stream, like literally just before it, you posted a quick review of the Western Digital 6TB Black and 6TB Red Pro hard drives. What's interesting about these?
These are the last two that didn't make it to 6TB yet.
Oh, okay.
Right, so you had the red and the green, which went to 6TB about a year ago.
Okay.
But anything else, like the Red Pro, which launched at the same time, was only up to 4.
4, yeah, I remember that.
And the
that.
Black at that time was still only up to 4, and pretty much everything else was kind of still right. there, right? So
this completes the 6TB
These are the big
roundup.
Ones. These are of the big ones that people are going to want.
And everybody likes big ones.
Yeah. And, you know, so if you want the really big black one, now you can get the really big one.
Really, in my mind, big and black is 8TB.
Oh, okay. Well,
but they don't have that yet.
8TB is pretty much in the enterprise sector only right now.
Right.
So basically, differences between these and the green and the red, respectively, like mm-hmm. those two, right, is you have the red series, be it red or red pro, those are like your NAS drives.
Right.
And then like the green and the black, or those are like your drives meant for a single drive use.
Okay.
Like you just have one drive, not an array of them, right?
Yeah.
And the green is slower RPM, just like the red, power efficient style, whereas the black is your fire breathing, like 7200 RPM. Consumes.
I don't know if we call
power.
Any hard drive fire breathing now,
well,
but okay, we'll go.
It consumes
with that.
Twice as much power and fire.
Oh,
comes
fire
to
breathing
mind.
In that respect.
Yeah.
Okay. All
because
right.
Well,
gets hotter.
Any of their drives that when you go from the what they call IntelliPower, which is really somewhere around 5400 RPM.
Yeah.
When you go from that to 7200 RPM, generally the wattage is just double.
Okay.
Right? It's
sure.
just, and it's physics. It's you're trying to spin platters at a faster speed, and it's kind of an exponential thing that takes place there that you're riding, a curve that you're riding. So, yeah, it's going to draw more power.
All right.
And people love to put these things in cases that were designed for maybe drives that were more like the green, that don't have a fan right in front of the drives, and then complain that the drive is, like, super hot. And
sure.
maybe even destroys itself because it was running really, really hot.
That's bad news.
Just
so what do they do in terms of performance? I'm looking at HD Tune. You know what graphs I want to look
really,
at.
Really, really impressive performance, even for random performance for hard really? Drives. Yeah. So for the file copy tests, right off the bat, these were actually beating Velociraptors.
Oh,
so in creation,
Velociraptors
and copy,
peak out at 1TB.
They peak out at 1TB, but they're 10,000 RPM drives.
But this is 6 times the density per drive, not per platter, but.
It is a drive that has 6 times the capacity.
Right.
But in the past, I mean, you know, drives that had 4 times the capacity weren't the same speed before.
Yeah.
Right? These are finally getting to that point where even though they're, you know, much larger drives and have larger platters and usually the seeks take longer, they also have a lot more cache.
Ah.
These have 128 meg of DRAM cache, which is even twice as much as any of the other 4TB and below models from the same line. So like a Red Pro or a Black Series drive that's 4TB capacity or lower is 64 meg, not
okay.
128.
All right.
Right. So they're doing something.
So they're bumping up some spec.
Yeah, it's a little bit different from the norm, right? They don't usually change the like the cache size or something within one line, right? And they're doing that here. Even the red and the green in 6TB capacities only had 64 meg of
okay.
cache. Right. So these mm-hmm. definitely show an advantage there. It does come through in the random performance. It comes through in even tests like
let's look at
like
the random Yapt. Page here.
Yeah. Where are you? There you go.
Oop, here.
Yeah. So Velociraptor's still going to be king there when it comes to your, you know, hardcore random IO, because it's a much more nimble drive and it's spinning much faster. But if you go down to, like, database, you'll notice the spread kind of gets a little more obvious there, and you see these two models.
The white line and the orange line up top, yeah, do kind of separate themselves from the rest of the non-Velociraptor hard drives.
You're talking about, like, a 5 to 10% gain, which is a pretty good gain considering that they're spinning at the same speed as, you know, other models that are in that comparison. So pretty good. And then there's another side effect that we see in our random reads. I think these drives are caching
the entirety of it.
No, it's not that they're caching the entirety of the test. It's that I think their caching is more aggressive now. I think now that they have more cache to deal with, because you'll see, I mean, the results are good even for the test size that's like 2 meg.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the cache is only 128K.
Hmm. Yeah.
Or 120, sorry. 2 meg, 120. No, it's more than 2 meg.
But,
anyway.
So that advantage shows up in random reads, but not in random writes, which is...
Yeah. Okay. Random writes doesn't show up, but random reads, some things the drives were doing were acting a little more like... It was caching hot data more than just like if you do more than X amount of transfer, it just rolls out of the cache.
Mm-hmm.
It almost seemed like it was kind of keeping some stuff around a little bit better. The reason everything kind of inverts when you go to the other...
Yep, this one, the random write.
...results is that the two really good performing drives there did not do advanced format. They did single sector ECC. So that means, and Yapt is not a 4K aligned test. So hard drives kind of fall on their butt when you hit them with something that's not aligned to the same sector alignment of the drives.
Right.
So that was the reason for that difference. But they still did, like, pretty good compared to the other drives that were advanced format. And advanced format, 4K alignment, any modern OS is doing that anyway. So that's really what they would see is actual aligned
use. Man, I'm not used to seeing MSRPs like this.
Yeah.
6 terabyte drives for $299. That's 4.9 cents per gigabyte.
Yep.
That's that's less than SSD still, I think.
And the other thing to note here is that there is only a $5 difference between the Black and the Red Pro.
They're targeting different...
They're targeting things, different, right? Different audiences.
Like Red Pro is still a NAS multiple device.
Yes, but the primary difference that the end user would see between those two, like the thing that would make you say, no, you should get a Black over a Red Pro, the only real thing is that a Black will spend a few more seconds trying to get a bad sector.
It won't time out as quickly.
It won't time out as quickly, right? Red Pro will probably wait somewhere around 7 seconds before it gives up. But in my experience, if a drive's trying to read something for 7 seconds straight,
it's probably bad.
That's like hundreds of times past the head anyway, right?
Thousands.
It's not thousands.
Okay, hundreds.
Tens of thousands?
Okay, you're right. RPM.
Yeah. So if it's not going to get it in 7 seconds, chances are it's not going to get it in like 30.
Sure.
Right? And I just, having recovered data from both types of drives, like be it the NAS types of drives versus the single drive types, if you're running recovery software on a drive, like one of the Reds, for example, or a Red-style drive that has TLER, that time-limited thing, you would make it through a bad disk at least in your lifetime. If you're trying to read data where you had a bunch of sequential bad spots on the drive, well, you want one that's going to kind of make it through that in some reasonable amount of time and then get to hopefully the good stuff that was on the rest of the drive, right? Because that does happen. Someone drops a drive.
So you would recommend...
So I would recommend Reds or Red Pros over Blacks or Greens, even for single use, as long as you understand that, it's only going to try to get a bad sector for 7 seconds as opposed to waiting 30 or longer, which if it's your OS drive, sometimes turns into your OS just hanging. You can't do anything with your system until the drive finally gives up.
Right.
You know, or it might even potentially crash your Windows session if your OS is like really critically trying to get some data off of that drive. So anyway, and there's always the possibility that someone upgrades their system because these two have 5-year warranties. Chances are at some point within the next 5 years, you might add a second one. You might put them in a RAID.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
only if you're crazy.
Even if it's a, even if it's a merit raid.
No, I don't do that shit anymore.
So, you know, if there is that possibility, I just kind of recommend it's only $5 more if you're already spending $300. You know, what's another $5 for just, you know, a little bit easier data recovery if it comes to it, and the possibility of adding it to a raid later.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, so check out that review. It is just recently posted to PCPer.com, like literally minutes before we went live, and if you want to see all that stuff. So now we're going to get into a couple of stories here that we don't have, like, things to show. There's no pages to look at. There's nothing there. And I wasn't really going to touch on this topic, except I got probably 10 emails and 15 to 20
tweets,
like direct tweets about it. AMD's R9 Nano situation.
Yeah.
Right. Last week, or no, on the live stream we did last week for Logitech, we used an AMD R9 Nano.
We did.
On the system. So we obviously have one.
Yep.
And the AMD has taken, I don't really know
some
how to
review
explain
sites
it.
Didn't get them.
Some review sites did not get them.
Some very popular review
some sites that were used to seeing get
that
AMD
normally
hardware.
Get those products. Yes.
Just wait. HardSCP is one, Tech Report is one. Those are the two that stand out to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know the reasoning for AMD's decisions to do that, right? So stuff's going around on Twitter that they were Roy Taylor said something about wanting fair reviews. And both Kyle and Scott have posted editorials on their site kind of talking about the situation. I think it's odd to me because if AMD were kind of like picking out people that they don't like, I would generally assume I would be on that list.
Because right? You're biased.
Yes. And I'm not trying to like make myself feel better or do anything to try to prop ourselves up. I would not have considered myself top of the list for AMD reviews. Like,
that are always in their favor.
In terms of what people inside the company think about me.
Yeah.
So the fact that I got one confuses me on many fronts. Now, I'm sure there are other websites that have it that I don't know about. I don't talk. We don't.
Well, you know what the real reason is?
No.
We're the only ones who still do AM3 plus motherboard reviews.
That's true.
Must be it.
That's true, right? And because of the 990 FXA review that you did, we were able to get an R9 Nano.
Awesome.
Seriously, I don't get it. I don't like it. I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense. Clearly, inside the company, they are changing how they're doing stuff, right? And I kind of talked about this, I think, a little bit on the build-up to the Fury X launch, where it was not sure if I was going to get one of those cards to review. Mm-hmm. And so they're doing different things, and they're sending cards to different places, to different outlets than I think they should. If you want my personal opinion on some stuff, like in terms of some of the people that have cards already, instead of the likes of HardSCP or Tech Report,
because I have a lot of
respect for those people, and they've been doing this for a long time, and people value their opinions.
Yeah. Sending it to a forum member of a site, but not sending it to the site seems
weird. I believe some of that is like they wanted to send it out to case modders,
right,
to build stuff. My understanding in that is that they were given non-final production samples. I don't even know what that means.
I don't know.
But it's still shitty regardless. But that being said, I don't know how much of a stance I can take because I have one. They sent us one, and we have a review that I'm still trying to finish that will go up tomorrow morning. So you guys can all make your decisions then.
Yeah.
It will be very interesting for me tomorrow when the reviews go live to look at who has what, who's posting what, and then kind of how that changes the narrative kind of going forward,
yeah,
right?
I mean, changing
both Kyle, both Kyle and Scott have said they're going to buy them and do reviews, right? And that's what they should do. That's what I have had to do in the past when not getting other stuff, right?
Sure.
NVIDIA didn't send us a Titan Z,
mm-hmm,
right? But we got a Titan Z and we did a review, and they didn't like it. But whatever, we moved on. So it's a very odd situation for me. I see a lot of people talking in the chat room. I'm not really paying attention to most of it. there are a lot of changes going on there, one of which I think is very good that we'll talk about at the end of the show in terms of how they're changing the structure of the company. I don't know if that will have a trickle-down effect onto things like this. I don't want to badmouth YouTubers or Red Team Plus people, but I will say that I think the value of independent, respected, long-term media is being overlooked by AMD in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this may be an example of that. So that's where I'll leave it at that. We'll talk next week about this specific product and our review and other people's reviews, and then we can go from there in terms of what the fallout from all this is. I don't know. They're just changing the way they do stuff. And I'm not AMD, so I don't get to make that decision.
You're saying you weren't in the meetings when discussing allocation?
I got the shocking invite, but I was busy that day and I couldn't make it.
You were at IDF.
Right.
It's because you own one share of AMD stock.
Oh, right, right.
That's what it is.
You have to disclose
it's the size of shareholder. Of course he has.
Right.
To
I was at the board meeting, so I added my name to the list at the bottom.
There you go.
I wrote it in pencils. Just like, wrote it in. And Ryan Schrout, too. Right, and apparently it worked.
Okay.
Nobody paid attention. All right, let's move on to that. Like I said, we'll talk about it more next week when I actually see the result of who had one, who didn't, and why that would matter. Right, it's crappy. We've seen this before. It's not the first time. It won't be the last time. And the two people that I know very well that are involved in this, it's happened to them before. So let's move on to Apple. Apparently announced some stuff. I don't know anything about it. They announced an iPad Pro, aka a Surface.
iPad Bro,
which
it's
actually
only slightly smaller than that Lenovo big table thing you can play Monopoly on.
That's true.
Only slightly.
Is it a 12-inch tablet?
12.9.
12.9.
Yeah. Might as well call it a 13-inch
tablet. So it's
tablet.
Bigger than this laptop screen.
Yep.
It's bigger than a bread box.
It's how probably, is that still a tablet?
I mean,
anything is a tablet screen with no keyboard.
Right? I mean, there's some cool stuff. Like, it's got quad speakers, and they orient themselves stereo-wise based on how you're rotating.
They're still back-facing,
right? That sounds cool.
Or facing out.
It's not quite front facing,
yeah,
but it's
not
still
front
neat
facing,
it's
but still neat. You know, yeah, it's still that's that all was right kind of. I thought that was kind of cool. It's got like a stylus that's like supposedly really advanced and stuff like that.
It's got a type cover or whatever Microsoft's calling it, or sorry, whatever Apple's calling it. They essentially copied the
it's
Surface
like a keyboard
type cover.
It's like a keyboard cover.
Somebody sent me a picture on Twitter that was a picture in 2007 of the Steve Jobs on stage with the iPhone with a stylus on it, and said,
the
"Why would
finger
you ever want a stylus?"
Yeah,
and
you
then
should use your finger.
It's like that's it was 8 years ago. Like I get it.
And the screen sizes were 3 inches on those
correct
iPhones.
Yes,
I might be
it's
wrong.
Like the 13.
I get it.
I might be wrong, but I didn't see anywhere to put the stylus. Should you buy one?
I don't think there is.
Which is
and doesn't come by your special.
It's the amp. It's the pencil. Get it right.
True.
It's the
Apple. Because they've reinvented the pencil. It's not even an iPad.
That's what.
Pencil.
See, they were contractually in Steve Jobs' will not allowed to call anything a stylus.
Somebody in the chat said that there's a quote from Steve Jobs in 2010 that says, "If you see a stylus, they blew it."
Yeah, he said that. He did say that too.
A lot
but
of things
have
happened in 5
You'll
years.
See a pencil.
If you see a pencil, it was a success.
It's a success because the pencil.
I mean, it's still interesting hardware. I'd like to try it out. I don't want to pay $1,000 for it.
Yeah, I will say that pencil is a far away from what a stylus was when that statement was made. Because those were just generic plastic things.
Does
it vibrate?
I mean,
Wacom
a
has
passive
been around
stylus
for
back
15
then was,
years.
Yeah, active stylus has been great. Since now this is the non-active, so yes, the passive stylus.
This is active.
No,
oh, it
is.
I thought it wasn't.
This is active and pressure sensitive and side pressure sensitive. Like it's,
yeah, that's like that's
a thing.
That stuff's
a
not
long
in,
time.
No, that's not in Wacom.
I bet it is.
Well, hell yeah,
two axis.
I bet.
I think it is.
It is.
I bet.
I'm pretty sure it is.
You can do sides.
Okay.
One of the guys in the graphics design department does.
Huh.
It's terrifying what he can do with that freaking stylus, to be honest.
Okay, well then it's no better than what
it has a new processor, the A9X. Anybody know anything about that? I didn't really pay attention.
Supposedly
I was
1.8 times faster than the last one.
Than the A8X?
Yes.
1.8X faster. They didn't say in what or anything.
No, in pretty much everything. Like the graphics is like double.
Okay.
1.9X on the graphics, which are stupid.
1.8X
It's CPU? Console level graphics.
Everybody says that. NVIDIA sent out an email talking about the advantages of Shield TV, Shield over Apple TV, which is something else that Apple announced, an update to the Apple, new TV, Apple TV finally.
Yeah. It's got apps.
It's got apps, that, yeah. And it's a little bit, apps. And it's faster.
And it's got the processor from this.
And it's got a new remote control you can chew on to change the channels?
No, you don't chew on it.
It looked like he was chewing
on it. Was it a candy bar?
Oh.
It was odd. Microsoft showed up at the iPad Pro section.
And they showed and Office.
Demoed Office.
And demoed Office I did at an Apple keynote.
I did kind of like how far that their side-by-side stuff seems to have come from what they were showing. Like, they were showing Office apps running side-by-side and, like, copy and pasting across from one to the other. And, like, kind of, it was pretty good for what I was expecting of it and it just going in. And the whole Microsoft just showing up there kind of just made me do a double take.
Apple's been pretty supportive of Office existing for a while.
Especially with a pro thing that they're trying to market to businesses specifically. Like, businesses use Office, get over it. Right? Yeah. Like, that's the mentality that they have to have in order to be successful there. It's just surprising to actually see them do that, I guess. There were no real announcements on a notebook or PC side, right? Like,
no.
None.
Not even surprise Apple Store updates or anything?
Not even one more thing.
iPhone 6S and 6S Plus.
Yeah.
Yes.
6S Plus is a dumb name.
Faster Touch ID and...
Oh, they reinvented right-click. That's what it was.
Yeah, it's doing that double 3D touch whatever it's
pressure
stuff.
Sensitive.
So 3D touch is something where you hold it longer and it brings up a context menu?
It's the how much you're pushing.
I thought
it was
pressure
longer. Sensitive.
Yeah, oh, okay.
It's not just a long press, it's pressure sensitive.
In reality, it's just how wide the circle of contact is. It's just going
more of your
that.
Fingers touching
just
the
more
surface.
Of your fingers touching,
So
fat finger syndrome is back again.
I guess...
Take it into the bathroom with you.
That has the A9 in it, which they said has new transistor technology, and we have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
Some people are speculating it's 14 or 16 FinFET.
I don't think they really stressed it would be a speed change.
I mean, they said 1.8x
really?
Over the A8.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if they did that same.
It was about the same.
They're 20 nanometer stuff. I mean, we've talked about this before ad nauseum, seemingly, is that was not exceptionally power efficient. I mean, sure, it was a small design. It was better than before, but it was not a huge jump over 28 nanometer. But if they're doing 14 or 16 nanometer FinFET, they could get a significant jump, and you add in some improvements in IPC with their design and a much larger processor with more graphics and all the things and better voltage control regulation throughout. I can see it possibly happening, but it would be a stretch.
Do we know what process Samsung has ready potentially?
Samsung has their 14 nanometer and they've been producing it since
then. It's
got to
be 14 nanometer. It's got to be 14 then.
I mean, TSMC is behind on...
Yeah, but they're
in their first generation 16 FF, not the FF Plus, which is what many people are expecting to be. They're more mainstream and potentially GPU manufacturing node.
I can't remember where on this chip it falls down, because like in the last chip they use Samsung and TSMC.
Yep.
So... Seems like they can do that this time.
If there's one group that has money to be able to hire engineers to port the designs to one process tech from one company to another,
that'd be interesting.
They're the guys that can do it. Because, I mean, it's going to have different design flows and design rules, but there's a lot of similar things between them just because of physics.
Right. Do we know that this is dual-core part still?
Well, the last one was tri-core, I believe. Or no, maybe that was the X.
The X was three core.
We know nothing about that. Yeah. We know nothing
no
about...
No core counts, yeah. No...
They don't
gotta
do
wait,
that anymore.
You gotta wait for those chip guys to...
Did they talk about RAM? Didn't they?
No.
Not in but they did in the iPad Pro, because they talked about doubling... Didn't the lady who came on to show the animated screens... No, that was the...
On the Pro, they talked about doubling memory bandwidth, like NAND.
Yeah.
Bandwidth.
The Pro
storage.
Has to have 2 gigabytes because it's doing multitasking, and the iPad Air had 2 gigabytes
and
for
then,
that reason.
Bandwidth to the memory was also.
I would imagine the 6S has 2 gigabytes. It might not.
The
It has to have two, because you need two for simultaneous side-by-side apps.
Yeah, but the 6S doesn't support that.
What?
6S Plus does.
The phone doesn't support multitasking. Oh, side-by-side.
Are we talking about the phones or the iPad?
Yes.
Well, I was kind of going on both. Just trying to figure out if they talked about core counts, memory size, or anything like that at all. I'm guessing the answer is no, based on the chat's lack of response as well.
I don't think the phones want the 2 gig.
Yeah, they didn't talk anything about that, like always. We'll have to wait for someone to figure that out.
So they tear it down.
They moved the motion coprocessor onto
silicon, which is interesting because we saw Qualcomm announce just that for the upcoming Snapdragon 820, that their motion processor was on silicon. Talked about the advantages of it over the external chip that I guess Apple still uses on the 6 and 6 Plus.
Yeah.
But the 6S looks like it'll change. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll find out more later. Nothing really on the notebook side or
PC that'll probably be first quarter next year.
I guess. Everybody's still waiting on Skylake parts, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Lame.
All right, let's move on to some news stuff here. Last little bit from IFA 2015. ASUS ROG Swift PG348Q, a 34-inch, 21x9, 100Hz IPS G-Sync monitor.
Didn't we talk about this last week?
We talked about the
Acer. We talked about an Acer version, I think. Or maybe it was BenQ. I don't know. Something very similar to
this. It was Asus.
No. No, it wasn't.
I don't think so. Oh. It wasn't on the show notes. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
But, I mean, here it is. There's not much else to say. 3440 by 1440, 100Hz IPS panel sounds pretty kick-ass to me.
In that same announcement, in that same announcement was the 165Hz 1440p. Like they slipped it in the bottom line of one of the paragraphs.
I don't know. This wasn't posted until the next day, so maybe.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen a curved monitor. The pictures I see, I don't buy it.
But there was another model slipped in there. It didn't make it into that news post. But in that announcement was basically the Asus new version of the Swift that's IPS that we've been waiting for.
Sure.
And it's 165Hz.
Okay. We talked about that last week?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. If you haven't seen a curved monitor, the effect will be lost on you. We have a couple of them here, and I actually really like the way it looks. Ken found a problem using one for like photo editing because straight lines weren't perfectly straight, like horizontal lines. Was that you that said that?
No.
I didn't say that.
Somebody else.
That makes sense.
Like it.
That could be a problem.
Yeah, I can see that.
It wasn't perfect. Like when you went to the edges, a perfectly straight line wasn't.
Oh no, it was something that we were looking at.
Maybe I don't know.
And it just stood out to both of us.
I would say for 95% of the people, that's not really an issue.
Yeah.
And I think the slight angle. I'm look like there's one here, and the curve is really subtle.
It's not a dramatic thing.
If you remember back to, was it Alienware that made a curved LCD monitor that was actually three scanners in one?
Those were DLPs built in.
Yeah, and it was really curved. Yeah. Like, it only took three of them to get almost all the way around you.
It was like a 90-degree curve.
It's nothing like that. Like, these are very subtle curves for the most part. But I'm excited about all these new monitors that were kind of announced and shown at IFA. So. More of that.
I have some 12-year-old monitors that I'm using right now.
Yeah.
They're really nice. They're SPVA from HP.
Good for you, buddy.
2004.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I got them cheap.
I'm still using like a 3007 and a 3008.
Yeah.
Those came out in 07 and 08, respectively. And actually, nice. I'm using two Dell Cinema displays that came out in what year would that have been? Like
Apple 2008? Cinema
Apple Cinema displays.
What did I say?
Dell.
Yeah, Apple Cinema displays.
Same vintage.
Yeah, like 2008.
Same panel inside of
So far, the only thing we've had to replace are two power adapters.
The power bricks don't last very long on those.
Well, there's another one on its way out.
Yep. Yeah, there's one making a little squealing sound.
So. That just kind of tells you the state of LCD technology in between then and now, and we're finally getting new crap.
Agreed. Yeah, that's true.
Not a lot happened for a few years.
One or two. OLEDs, though. Look to see more.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jeremy, what do you know about this Lian Li PC V33 case? Anything interesting here other than small footy print?
Well, small footy print, full ATX motherboard.
Really?
Yeah. It doesn't look it, does it?
No, it does not.
But then again, it also looks a lot like the mini ITX version.
Ah, okay. Honestly, just looking at the shape of it, I assumed it was a mini ITX case.
No, it's but now I see all just over 13 inches by 14 by just over 15. Which is one commenter points out, it's not exactly a cube now, is it?
So the Q33 Sebastian did a review of, and it opened the same way, and it was a mini ITX. Okay. All right. Now
so this is almost exactly the same thing blown up a little bit. And with the depth just over 13 inches, you should be able to squeak a 12-inch card in there. You're going to have to make sure the drives are out of the way, but then again, that's sort of what this case is designed for.
I remember,
and that's what lube's for. Come on.
Yeah, right. Also true.
I remember being not sure I liked the idea of the hinged opening for the Q33, but upon like taking it apart and putting a system in it, thinking that it actually worked fairly well.
That's pretty cool because it's an open test bed that you can cover.
Exactly.
That's true.
That's a good point. As long as you see that space on the desk for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That front mesh is big enough for a 240-millimeter radiator.
That's pretty cool.
That's a pretty good idea, that's actually.
Not bad,
just take off the front, and that'd be an awesome test
bench. Hey, would that actually fit in Sebastian's decor?
Would it fit, like, say, in his home theater stereo set? I mean, this is too big. It's not hipstery enough. There's not enough glass on it.
Yeah.
No.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
Well, unless he put, like, a micro ATX board in there just so that there was actually just 90% open space with one little tiny board in the corner.
Oh, yeah. Just leave it open.
So standard version is going to be $199, glass side panel version $229, available in early September. So what's interesting is I look at this here, and there are no sides. So you have to take the sides off, and then you open it up.
Yeah, but they're like posts that you just pop off really easy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was like that in the Q33. Right, yeah, so here's the one with the glass side there. So, I mean, that could be pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
I wonder if you can do two glass sides? Does it have two glass sides?
I don't know the answer to that.
Like,
can't see that
two
side.
Two glass
trying to
sides
rotate
are too
it,
much.
Can't tell if the glass look. Model
damn
is.
Damn you, Web 2.0.
Yeah.
Wait, no, Apple talked about this. You need to hold down on it, and then the picture becomes a video.
Oh.
Right, an animated GIF. That's
no,
right.
Yes. No. The picture is now moving.
Oh.
All right, we'll see. all right, let's move on to this one. Scott posted this up. Nothing really to talk about here. There is a video series from a guy called iBook Guy where he is detailing old school graphics and how they work. I'm not going to play this video back so they don't take us down on the stream. But it is an explanation of how early computers struggled to draw information to their displays because they lacked enough RAM to hold a single frame buffer, even without application code. I watched part one of this video. It was actually really, really good. I haven't finished watching part two, but it goes into Apple and Atari. And he's already talking about, like, the Apple II. It could actually display four colors, but it could only display any two of them in any section of the screen at a time based on a bit offset or something like that. He details it fairly well, and it talks about because of this complexity, like very few people ever properly learned how to program Apple II color graphics.
Yeah.
Apple II monochrome, fine. Yeah. Apple II color graphics, not so great.
Well, why bother? It's not like people were able to afford the color monitor in to begin with.
That's
green
true.
And black or orange and black were good enough for us.
Don't say us. Don't bring me into this. I didn't have an Apple II.
Well, I had an Apple IIe.
Yeah, I think I had a friend. I think I had a neighbor that had an Apple IIe. Yeah. That was
and let me tell
first.
You, it made Rocky's boots a lot harder because some of those resistors were color-coded, and you just sort of guessed.
Yeah.
It's kind of why NVIDIA went with quadratics with the NVIDIA. It's like, hey, let's save on that memory because it's expensive.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. But go to PCSpur.com, look for that part two of iBook Guy's old school graphics series, and check out that video. And also check out part one first, I guess. But it's pretty neat stuff if you're just kind of curious about that. Let's talk about another storage thing. Western. So if you didn't think 6 terabytes was enough, maybe 12 terabytes will be good. This is the Western Digital MyBook Pro. 12 terabytes of Thunderbolt connected storage?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, they've done something like this in the past, but they just kind of like refreshed the unit and put some USB 3 ports on the front of it so you can even add more, you know, you just plug something into those USB 3 ports and have that device connect to the system over Thunderbolt.
Right.
You know, kind of handy. But you can, basically it's a 2-drive array. Those come defaulted to RAID 0.
hate that.
Which is Death Wish RAID.
Yeah.
But if you really need the capacity, and as long as you've got a backup somewhere else, you're good. But you can always change it to, you know, a mirrored array, or you can change it to JBOD. It's that flexible, so you can just, you know, make it whatever you want once you get it. It does Thunderbolt pass-through. I think they said you can daisy-chain 6 of them if you really, really need a lot of storage connected to a device that only has Thunderbolt capability.
USB 3 capable.
And can connect to a host system over USB 3, so you're not locked out or anything if you just want to get one of these and plug it into a PC.
Any pricing or anything like that yet?
I don't recall if I put it in there or not.
Pricing says $899 for the 10 terabyte, $999 for the 12 terabyte. You can go all the way down to $599 for the 6 terabyte model of it.
Okay.
So, available now, apparently.
Yep.
It's kind of expensive. We just talked about 2 6 terabyte hard drives being, what, $299 each?
That's true, but it's probably coming with those in it.
Sure.
But that's a $400 drive enclosure then.
Yeah. It is. But it's Thunderbolt.
Yeah.
Those usually aren't that cheap, right?
Yeah, they're not.
You're not going to see an advantage to using Thunderbolt over USB 3 on that, are you, though?
Right? For that, probably not.
Performance-wise, no. Daisy-chaining capability, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but you've got to really need it then.
I mean, people are going for Thunderbolt-specific connectivity devices because that might be like the better thing that they have.
Yeah.
Right? Or just they want to be able to daisy-chain them.
Well, daisy-chaining, yes, but all Thunderbolt computers have USB 3.
Right.
All Thunderbolt 3 computers have USB 3.
No. Like,
you just mean just because they're not going to have...
Yeah, not one chip like USB, like Thunderbolt 3 is, but like they have.
Fair.
If you want a motherboard to use that attached storage on, however.
Right.
Look no further than the Gigabyte Z170X 75 TB3.
Can I introduce you to the Gigabyte Z170X UD5TH motherboard with Thunderbolt 3?
Hey,
we just plugged
that thing into it.
So it was interesting.
Actually, you can't. You need an adapter because the port changed.
Because this is
Type-C?
Type-C, USB Type-C.
Yep.
First, the mini DisplayPort connector.
I'm talking about the Thunderbolt.
Yeah, the Thunderbolt uses Type-C now.
It uses the Type-C connector.
Thunderbolt 3 uses... So when I was at IDF, I talked with Gigabyte about this. Gigabyte has some kind of exclusive for some amount of time about for using Intel's
Alpine Ridge
controller,
which
is Thunderbolt 3 and USB 3.1. They had been using it for USB 3.1 on probably 4 or 5 different motherboards, but they hadn't quite gotten to the certification process for Thunderbolt. Mm-hmm. So even though the chips were on there and the port, whatever was on the motherboard, they hadn't actually been approved yet. This is the first one to get it, the TH version of the Z170X UD5 Thunderbolt 3, powered by Intel's own Thunderbolt controller, the new Thunderbolt 3 protocol. Available over 2 USB Type-C connectors on the back I/O of the board, brings an unprecedented single-wire bandwidth of up to 40 gigabits per second, twice that of previous generation.
The important question is, does it come with the adapter to adapt to a standard Thunderbolt?
No.
Nope.
No.
Where would you buy right now that adapter?
It doesn't exist.
I mean, it doesn't exist, probably.
So you can't...
Oh, StarTech will put one out soon.
So you can't plug a Thunderbolt thing into this motherboard, is what you're telling me.
You can plug Thunderbolt 3 things into it.
But you could plug a 4K monitor
or two. Those don't exist yet.
Or 5K.
Wait, Thunderbolt 3 things.
If you can plug a monitor into it,
you can't. You can't.
Well, I think that's Type-C.
Not over Thunderbolt,
though.
Yeah.
Or you find one of those
Everything has to use this new Type-C adapter.
Type-C boards.
Yeah.
Right, connector, not adapter.
Yeah, everything has to use this new type.
Which is great once everybody gets there, because it will be USB devices, it will be display devices, it will be Thunderbolt devices, all using the same connector type.
Yeah.
Until we get there, it's kind of like, well, now we're kind of in a similar problem we were before. We're just kind of waiting for Thunderbolt things to come out. This will do 4K 60 hertz, dual actually, or one 5K display. Thunderbolt 3 over USB Type-C offers power delivery for up to 36 watts. Be able to daisy chain 12 devices because you have 2 ports. Without devices to test it, it's kind of like, okay, this is a great feature.
And without any way to adapt to devices that you could test.
You wouldn't be able to adapt it to the higher speed.
Oh, true.
Right.
But at least you could.
But Al, you're still going to want it.
No.
It's got PCIe 3.0 by 4 M.2 slots and sex drive slots. So it is a good storage test bed.
PCIe, how many M.2 slots?
I think this one has three.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All the high-end Gigabyte boards, I think, have three M.2 slots.
Will it do the RST RAID across all three?
Oh, I'm sure.
I would hope so.
Sure. Huh. Yeah.
At this point.
That makes it more interesting.
Yeah.
Because the only way to really do raids on the other Z170 boards we've tested so far is you had to have mixed devices.
Wait, like, maybe this one doesn't have three.
And hey, you know what the best thing is? Mm. Is that I remember spending a lot more money on a motherboard once that had 1394B support. And I'll tell you, I got every penny out of it.
I bought a MacBook Pro once because it had 1394B support specifically.
It's still driving the monitor
and it still powers
you.
This screen right
yeah,
here.
Buddy.
It has about 5 years of uptime.
Yeah, 5 years of uptime. That sounds right. That sounds right.
It was actually since we moved to this office, so like 3 years of uptime.
Yep.
All right. Our last bit of news here, I think, which is good news. I'm going to put this away so I stop playing with it. Is AMD is doing a restructure of the company to some degree. They announced today the creation of the Radeon Technologies Group inside the company, which basically kind of creates a vertical for all of AMD.
Recreates.
All of their AMD graphics technology. So from product to IP, like it kind of, from the way I understand it, it kind of separates out the graphics division slightly.
Where was it before? Just kind of part of
the AMD
computing
everything.
Group.
Right
computing
next to CPUs,
group.
Basically?
Yeah.
All computing mixed together?
Group. Yeah.
Okay.
And what they did when they did this was they took Raja Koduri, who has been a longtime guy at ATI and then AMD, left AMD for a while, went to Apple, was their chief, what was he?
Mobile graphics, shockingly.
Yeah, he was doing graphics architecture at Apple. Came back to AMD a couple, 3 years ago, and he was CTO of the graphics division. Now he is senior vice president and chief architect of this new Radeon Technologies group. And you can see here, what a handsome man. What a handsome man.
I'm Raja Koduri, and I'm a handsome man.
I'm going to give him crap because they sent me this new headshot to use for this story. I looked up his old one on the AMD site, and he had less gray hair than the old one. So I don't know if that was on purpose or somebody was just trying to...
Well, he was at Apple for a while.
He was gone for a while.
More distinguished with the more gray.
So he's no longer responsible for just like the intellectual property of the AMD graphics. He's now entirely responsible for the hardware, software, and business direction of Radeon products. So. Okay. Everything from how they deal with partners and like game vendors and publishers to how they deal with Microsoft and Sony on the IP side or anybody else, or how they what products they develop, how they fix Catalyst software, how they adjust all that stuff. It's all now totally under his control.
And when did this take effect?
Today, apparently. I don't know. Probably just recently. But it was announced
and
today.
And marketing?
Marketing will be under that. Anything that has to do with graphics will be under his domain, right? And we don't normally talk about like personnel changes necessarily on the podcast or really at PCPro.com in general, unless there's something specific about them that stands out to me. This one is significant to me because I know him very well, have known him for a very long time. And for example, when he came back in to AMD, it was right about the time when all the shit was hitting the fan about frame rating and how their Crossfire stuff was broken. And he was the one guy who had just come in, and I sat down and I talked to him about this problem, and he said, let me go figure it out. You know, I just came back. I don't know what's going on. And he figured it out. He came back to me and he goes, yeah, it's broken. We're going to fix it.
Okay.
Right? And he kind of just did it. Right. Yeah. And that was kind of one of his first things that he had to deal with upon coming back to the company for the first time.
Cool.
And I have. Right. Exactly. And so if there are legitimate complaints about marketing and PR, he will address it. Right. Okay. I have no doubt that he will make changes that need to be made or whatever it is. Yeah. Right.
Don't expect to see it on Twitter, though, guys.
No. That's not what's going to happen.
It's not his style.
No.
He's much more introspective. And. Like I said, he is a fantastic person. I was super glad to have him back at the company when he was gone for Apple. It was a sad time for all of us.
Okay.
Because nothing good ever comes out of – like nobody – nothing interesting happens.
I just like,
right? Like external, like we don't get to see any of the cool stuff that occurs with any individual inside
like
Apple.
I've dealt with that same kind of stuff. I've dealt with that same kind of stuff for storage, right? Like I'll see something that's weird with some product and I'll try to, you know –
I have to jump through all these hoops to try to convince people that, hey, there's actually something wrong with this, right? And so it's refreshing to have someone that's just goes, wait, what? Let me check. Okay, yep. We see it on our end, too. Okay. We'll work on it.
Raj is somebody that, like... go ahead.
He's actually kind of an unassuming guy. He's very competent in what he does. I remember very distinctly the first time I met him was at the Lake Tahoe affair with the original Radeon 2800 series. 26? Yeah,
20-something.
Anyway. No, the 3000 series when they were first introduced and the original Phenom. That it was breakfast and he was kind of looking around and I said, hey, Raja, why don't you have a seat and have breakfast with me? And he's like, please. Hey, you know, your name's Josh, and he do all this little stuff about me. And I was only, you know, I was at PenStarSys.com and nobody knew Josh, but... He pays attention, and a lot of things don't get past him, but he's an easy guy to talk to, and he knows his stuff. So in between him and Jim Keller, we're hoping they can kind of turn the ship.
I agree. And like I said, he's...
And Lisa. Don't forget Lisa.
Yep. So Raja reports directly to Lisa now. And I don't want to drive on this anymore. He's just somebody that I feel like if I say, hey, this, and this, like he'll just... He'll answer me honestly, and that's
he's not
tough to find
a bunch
in this
crap
business.
In your face
it really is.
Yeah,
but
there is some rumor going around that part of this division, this kind of separation of GPU from CPU internally, might be in hopes of doing some kind of spinoff, maybe selling one of the divisions or making it more attractive to acquisition. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Josh. It's probably a little bit early to speculate on it, but you could see that. Maybe being one of the directions that they would take.
Possibly, but when you look at the direction of AMD APUs and where they're wanting to go in not just, you know, Zen and high-performance computing, they're going to need to leverage that technology coming from the Radeon group because it is going to become more and more important, especially if they want to start going into, you know, more low-power and mobile applications far beyond what we see now with our current APUs with, what's the latest? Bima, Carrizo?
I don't know. Yeah.
There's going to need to be a lot of integration between the engineering of the groups, and it would be bad if they were to spin it off. Maybe, you know, maybe the bean counters have a better idea of this than I do, but the technology is now, I mean, it's like the original CPU and the guys who created FPUs for that.
Right.
They put them all together at one point, and now they're just, you can't separate them. And I think graphics is certainly going to be this. I mean, you're going to have a massively parallel port. Good Lord. And then, you know, one that can handle, you know, a part that can handle serial so much better. So it's a balance, and I think it would be bad to, you know, spin them off. But, hey, what do I know?
I think it would be bad, too, because if we know anything, the spinoff of their manufacturing and then how they promised that they would still be this really close partnership, that did not quite work out the way that we'd all expected it to.
Oh, hey, let's give our Adreno guys to Qualcomm so that Qualcomm become one of the largest SoC makers in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into our hardware software picks of the week. I've got the first one here, guys. This is a pretty kick-ass little motherboard. This is the MSI Z170i Gaming Pro AC. This is a mini ITX Z170 motherboard, ready for Skylake processors.
How cheap?
I don't know. I couldn't find it for sale anywhere yet.
Oh.
It's brand new. I think I got like the first one in the US because we were trying to use it for our R9 Nano build, which we did. So this is one of those boards.
It's got stuff packed into a little board.
It is. So it's got support for the, you know, the new Skylake CPUs. It's got an M.2 slot on the back.
Is that 2x2 AC?
It's 2x2 AC. Yep.
M.2 on the back that somehow manages to fit underneath the standoffs.
Yeah, it's going
to
be pretty...
That's a tight fit.
I'm sure it works.
Is
that angled or is it straight out?
It's straight. It's straight across. Flat. It sits flat.
It's flat, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, the standoffs
are pretty tall.
Yeah, they can be. It's got USB 3.1 support. It's got four SATA ports and one SATA Express port or SEX port if you're Jeremy. You know, those combined in that degree. Gigabit internet. It's got DisplayPort, HDMI. It's got a PS2 port. I think it's actually a pretty kick-ass motherboard. I have no idea how much it's going to cost. shouldn't be too bad. There's a SteelSeries logo on the back of this. Certified SteelSeries.
Is there a significance to the red USB ports, or are they just trying to color?
I think they're just trying to color coordinate.
Okay.
These are both USB 3.1, and then this is USB 2.0, and this is USB 2.0. But it's gold, which I think indicates something about.
It's for the audio.
Yeah, I'm trying to see what they call.
No, it's the low latency, high connection, gaming ports for PS2 and USB.
What?
Really?
Specifically designed for SteelSeries mice, I bet.
Something like that. I think you actually missed
it. No, you're
wrong.
It's
up above.
USB Audio Power Pro.
Yeah, it's the audio.
USB Audio Power Pro continuously delivers a stable 5 volts to the USB ports, making sure you can continue to enjoy the crystal clear audio quality standard you expect when using a premium DAC or professional USB headset.
It's just extra filtering on
professional
the
professional USB headset.
Yes.
Does not compute.
But if you look at the PS2 port and the USB ports at the top, they are the gold-plated ones as well. And that's
at the top. The top connector?
On the 990 FXA.
Oh, well, that may not be on this one. I don't know.
Oh, well, who knows?
I mean, yeah. Huh. Bluetooth 4.2, 802.11ac. It's Intel LAN on here, so it's not it's not the killer stuff.
Bye, killer.
They've got studio grade sound with audio boost. So we're gonna do a full review of this board too, but this was the one we used with the R9 Nano here, and it's kind of interesting. All right, so here's your Mini ITX motherboard, here's your R9 Nano.
Look at that.
They fit together.
It's nice. And if you look, the motherboard is actually
wider than the Nano.
Yeah, wider than the Nano.
If you put a 6700K in that, it'd be like a magical thing that no one can buy.
Right.
That's true.
Right.
It'd be an apparition.
Put a 6700K in here, and there's three products that none of you can have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'll do that later.
Okay. Yeah. You're going to tweet out a picture of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course you are.
The unicorn of the hardware world.
Yes.
So that's the Z170i Gaming Pro AC. We'll talk about it a little bit in our Nano review tomorrow, and then we'll have a review of it in the not-too-distant future as well. Jeremy, what you got?
I got a bone to pick, and it's with some of our viewers, because I'm sure some of you are guilty of pre-ordering computer games from a large manufacturer that's already making billions of dollars and really doesn't care. It's your fault we've got crap video games because they've already turned a profit before they're even done bug fixing. It's gotten so bad that today Bethesda announced that for those of you that are already pre-ordering Fallout 4 at $70 a piece so that you can get your Pip-Boy-themed Hitachi magic wand, you can now spend another $30 to get DLC that is going to exist. They're pretty sure they'll make DLC. They have no idea what it is, what the idea is going to be. It'll probably be a Merkin for your character. But they guarantee that anyone who buys it after the fact will have to pay $40. So you're saving the $10. So you're now forking over $100 to Bethesda, who is richer than Croesus, for a game which is still in bug development. And yet at the same time, I see people constantly complaining about Bethesda and certain other Assassin's Creed games which were recently released, which were not ready for prime time. But yet, why would they care? Because they've already made their money before they even released the game. Go to Kickstarter. If you got to get a game before it's ready, there's a huge amount of independent gamers or game designers out there right now. You can spend gobs of money in Kickstarter and for the most part come out pretty happy. Or you could be like the guys who tried to support Uwe Boll on Kickstarter and contribute to the party. So don't be the problem. Let's convince people that if you want to sell me a product, I'd actually like to see it first, as opposed to, say, investing in the Phantom console, maybe?
You know, it's kind of interesting, because this is the exact opposite of what, not to keep repeating this, but the Dirt Rally guys who went Steam Early Access, charged two-thirds of the price of the full thing, and then keep adding to it at no extra price to you.
Awesome.
Now that I can support 100%.
Then why didn't you buy it and race with us?
Well, because it was in Bellevue, and apparently their internet sucks.
Bellevue's in Washington.
He was swimming in beer somewhere.
Nah.
Yes. You know. Yes, I've been to Bellevue several times.
And you know, the Lenovo laptops are not necessarily known for their gaming prowess.
No.
What?
Decent to work on, but...
You can play Rocket League on it, it's fine. Josh, what do you got for us?
What do I got? Backup PV2.
What?
It's a really, really nice program. It's inexpensive. You can try it for free if you need it. A nice solution that is more robust than RoboCopy. And it comes with a GUI. Well, I mean, some of the latest versions of RoboCopy
use right.
GUI. But for $19, you can have all of that functionality of like RoboCopy, plus more backup crap. It's really inexpensive. It's simple to use.
It has been tested with multi-million item backups.
Exactly. And we're actually using that at our work to transfer over 15 terabytes of data from the old server to the new.
Does it just work like a champ. Does it do shadow copy? Do you know?
I think so.
If the file's in
use. Wow.
Yeah. That'd be good, actually. Yeah.
I mean, RoboCopy kind of does that, but yeah.
Oh, it does use Windows shadow copying. Yeah, that's in there.
Yep. Yeah.
Sweet.
It's good stuff.
The name bothers me.
The name
because
is
it doesn't
not...
even make any sense in the Roman way, because it would be buck-up.
It's like... it's.
You're right.
It's like backup, but with a V instead of backup, an A. Yeah. It's like backup. They flipped the A around.
Yeah.
It's upside down.
And took out the cross member.
Yeah.
Clever.
The name is weird.
I don't like it.
Anyway, it's cheap, and it works really well.
Cool. Good pick. Last, not least.
So we do a lot of Excel Kung Fu in the office here, and I stumbled across this thing the other day where, you know, you've got a spreadsheet with, like, formulas and stuff on it, and you want and also data that you filled in, and you want to be able to remove the stuff that's filled in, like just the numbers, but leave all the formulas, right? And usually you go through and you hold down Control and you select different chunks of cells and stuff like that, right? You don't have to do that. You can select the whole thing and then hit F5 and up pops this little go to special dialog box thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hit the constants button and then you hit OK, basically. And it like will automatically, your selection will automatically change and formulas will all be excluded. And just all the values will be selected. And then if you wanted to clear all of them, for example, you can just hit delete. And you have just emptied all of the fill-in fields on that area that you selected.
And then you just input new ones?
Yeah, and then you just fill in new stuff or whatever, yeah.
Whatever you're doing?
Yeah. It's usually the most common thing.
This is already a part of Excel?
It's been in Excel. It's been there for a while, apparently.
I hate Excel.
And you can use that same go-to dialog to specifically select... Like, say you wanted to only select the formulas. You can just choose the other option in that same box.
Yeah.
And then once you hit OK, just only the formulas would be picked. It's pretty cool. All right. Didn't even know it was a thing until recently, and I've been using
that. Find, select, go-to, special.
Yeah. Or just hit F5. F5 is the hotkey for it.
Seems like something I would have hit accidentally and seen this.
Yeah.
To be honest.
But, you have to have some stuff selected. And then hit F5.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe that's it.
And ASAP Utilities does that and a whole bunch more. It's one that's been around for a long time, freeware for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And dirt cheap for anyone else. And I highly recommend it. If you spend a lot of time with Excel screwing you around, get it and screw Excel around.
Oh, okay.
Ugh, I hate that application. But I hate GNUplot more.
Yeah.
So, I just want. What I need is Cortana. To understand what I want it to do when
what
I say
you
Cortana.
Need is artificial intelligence.
Yeah, it so, is. Yeah. Cortana, take these two data sets and compare them, but match up the starting values for when it goes to peak. Like that.
Where is that person? Where is that virtual person?
I just need that. Ugh. God, computers suck. Anyway, that was the podcast, everybody. Thanks for joining us. PCPro.com/podcast is the URL you can go to find all the back episodes, our videos, RSS feeds, MP3 downloads, direct downloads, SoundCloud embeds, YouTube embeds, all that stuff will be posted at PCPro.com/podcast. And again, if you want to join us for the live stream of our recording, you can go to PCPro.com/live. We were doing it on Wednesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. And PCPro.com/subscribe to sign up for the mailing list to do so. And if you go to the live stream, if you go to slash live when we record it, you get to go into the chat with us here. We talk, yuck it up, and we take input from you guys if we forget something or we need to touch on a subject that we didn't get to. So it's pretty useful, I think, for everybody. It's useful for us. I hope it's useful for you guys, and I hope you enjoy hanging out because we enjoy doing. We have to record it anyway.
Yeah.
In theory.
And, and most of the time, it's not that much more of a headache to live stream it.
Usually.
So, you know, well, here. That's what we're going to do. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will see you next week. I'm Ryan Schrout.
I'm Jeremy Hellstrom.
I'm Josh Walrath.
I'm Alan Malentano.
Bye.